Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
Every time I'm lucky enough to get an introduction from John, I almost want to record it and then listen to it when my alarm clock goes off, just so I don't feel like my life is wasted and useless. It's always a very generous introduction. Thank you, John. So hello and welcome. I was always taught that the key to a successful speech is to, before you do anything, put yourself in the shoes of your audience. Try to see the world as they're seeing it. Or as Bill Clinton infamously put it, I feel your pain, right? So as I was getting ready for this speech, what I realized is that I had no real sense of what I should talk about. On the one hand, it's an entrepreneur class, so I could talk about entrepreneurship and strategy and management and business execution and spend a lot of time talking about that. On the other hand, you're all at a really unique point in life, or most of you are, in college. And so what I did was I allowed myself to go back in time to when I was a senior in college, and the year was 1994 in St. Paul, Minnesota. I was at the University of St. Thomas. And as I allowed myself to go back in time, the first thing that I remembered was my car. Okay, I had a 1970 Toyota Corolla, canary yellow. It had bald tires, bad brakes, and the best feature of the car in a Minnesota winter was that it had no heater. My solution was to get a little plug-in to the cigarette lighter that had a space heater that blew hot air. So I'd start up the car on a frigid morning, get into it, and I'd take this little heater and I'd defrost the windows like I was blow-drying somebody's hair. And then when I was driving, I'd stick the heater down my coat to stay warm. I think that was my first memory because I can remember vividly thinking, okay, someday I'm going to be successful. I'm going to have money, and I'm going to look back, and I'm going to laugh at this car and this experience. And so as I thought about it more, that's kind of what I got in touch with back when I was at the stage that most of you are in. And that said, I was thinking a lot about, what's my career? You know, how am I going to make money? I had a lot of things going on, just like you do, right? I was working a full-time job, taking a full credit load. I was working on my black belt in martial arts. I had a girlfriend. I had a social life. So juggling all these different things back then. The driving focus was, how do you make it? And maybe for me, it was, how do I feel comfortable in my own skin? So that's what I came prepared to talk about tonight, is the physics of success and happiness. And how do you get both of those things? The method that I'm going to use is a combination of three things. The first is real-world experience. Every speaker, of course, needs to come from their own experience. Experience for me, there's two sides to that coin. There's the perceived successes. So John mentioned some of those. I've been involved with successful companies, built them, sold them. I've had great business partnerships. I've had great relationships. Just like you have great achievements. On the other hand, I've suffered through terrible relationships and debilitating business failures. Okay, I've had board battles and founder battles. And frankly, you hear this all the time, it's true. I learned 10,000% more from the failures, from the losses, from the suffering than I ever did from the successes. So I'm going to bring some of that into tonight's talk. The other thing I'm going to draw upon is management theory. So my company is called Organizational Physics, and I work with growing companies, and I give a new management system. And it's a way to manage your strategy, your growth, your people, your team, to execute quickly, and to have more personal success and satisfaction. I'm really passionate about it. This comes from a deep array of other management experts. So I'm going to bring that into the equation. But what makes me unique and different is that I'm going to bring the classic laws of physics into how to have success and happiness. That might sound really strange, because physics, of course, is the study of matter and energy and the interactions between the two. Very rarely is it thought to apply to human interactions, businesses or relationships, or even joy and satisfaction. But if we can use physics, we're going to see it does some really unique things for us. First of all, physics gives a lens. It's a way of looking at the world or looking at a situation. For example, the most famous equation in physics is E equals mc squared, right? Well, if you and I both understand that equation, then we have a lens, a shared lens. We can look at the world in the same way and understand, see the same thing. It also gives a language, right? A way to communicate. It doesn't matter if you're in China and I'm in Paris, we can speak the language of science and understand one another. And it also gives a sequence of steps to use. If you do these things this way, you'll get this result. So I'm here tonight to share that there's some universal truths to success and happiness, and that they're based on laws of physics that we interact with all the time in everyday life. Now, physics, it's an awesome field of study, but it's just a framework. Okay, so if you look here, there's two physicists at the board writing a complex equation. First is step one, then is step three, and step two, they have no idea what happened, so of course, it's just a miracle, okay? So take what I say with that grain of salt, okay? No theory, a theory is only as good as your own ability to use it, to execute on it, your own creativity, your own passion, your own determination and intelligence. So you guys ready? Okay, the reason I ask if you're ready is I just read an article yesterday, maybe you saw this, it was a big study of college students, several thousand, and the statistics came back, 45% of first and second year college students don't show an improvement in critical thinking, writing, reading, or reasoning skills. So I know that's not this group, right? Everybody I've met with, I know this is a very challenging program. But I need you to have critical thinking with me. Some of the things I might share with you, what might seem even a little controversial at first, I know they did for me as I was first thinking about them. So here we go. Let's talk about success. First of all, share with me what makes someone or something successful. Just let me hear from the group.
Shout out, guys. Praise.
Say it again.
Praise.
How does praise make something successful?
It's a value given by others.
Okay, so someone else perceives it as successful. Great. What drives success? What are the inputs into success?
Goals.
Yeah, having goals.
Determination.
Security. Say it again.
Security.
Okay, maybe some security.
Hard work.
There we go. Hard work. What else? Commitment, ethics,
money.
What about good looks?
Charm.
What about
money?
What about connections? The ability to communicate. Okay, we could keep going. I want to say that all of these things certainly can contribute to being successful, but there's something more fundamental. And I'm going to share it with you. But first, I want you to think of one thing in your life that you'd like to have be more successful.
Happiness?
Just pick it. Everybody pick it. Doesn't matter what it is. Happiness. You just need some definition of success for you. Lose weight, happiness, fulfilling career. Get an A in your course. Everybody got something?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not talking about fame, by the way. I want to clear that up. So this enterprising college student already figured out how to have fame. You can see on that y-axis, it's skill requirements. On the x, it's fame. The hardest job to be famous is a scientist. And the easiest is to make a sex tape. So if you're looking to be famous, there's the answer. In order to figure out how to make something, anything successful, first thing you want to do is look at it as a system. Okay? A system is a series of interrelated, interdependent elements. They work together to form a complex whole. What you should realize right off is there's absolutely nothing that you can think of that's not a system. Your system. Look, for example, okay, let's use me, all right? I'm a system. I have a physical body that's comprised of smaller systems, like a skeletal system, a digestive system, an immune system. I'm part of a family system. have a mental system, emotional system. TMP is a system. UCSB, Santa Barbara, Planet Earth, you with me? Everything's a system. Notice that line is dotted. What that means is there's no closed system. Okay, every system's open. It's in interaction and with it's exchanging energy and information with every other system. So you can apply this circle, right? Big or small. You want to look at a company. Is it going to be successful? You want to look at your life, your relationship. You with me? So there's two laws of physics that we can apply to any system and use them to determine if it's, the system's going to be successful, however you define it. The first law is called the first law of thermodynamics. And it says this, that every system at any point in time has a finite amount of energy. Intuitively, this should make sense. Imagine a person stranded on a desert island. Okay? Unless they can go and get new energy from the environment, more food, more water, they're going to quickly perish, right? Same thing's true for a company. If a company isn't getting new energy, money, resources, clout in the marketplace from its customers, it's quickly going to go out of business, isn't it? So every system, no matter where you find the define the line, has a finite amount of energy. Okay? The second law of thermodynamics is called entropy. Basically, entropy means that shit's always falling apart. Okay? So congratulations. When you woke up this morning, you had a finite amount of energy, and it's all falling apart. That's life. Here's another way to visualize entropy, right? Over time, things disintegrate. This is a very, very powerful law in physics. In fact, if you're a physicist, you'll know this. But your theory can go up against just about every law there is, right? It can go up against the law of gravity. It'll be seen as curious. It can go up against the law of special relativity. People will give you attention. But if your law goes up against the law of entropy, all you can do is hold your head and cry because it's irrefutable, right? You're just going to suffer. So just keep these things in mind. Success, then, however you define it, is a function of these two things. This is based on these two laws of thermodynamics. Success is a function of integration over entropy. I'm going to define both of these, and then we're going to use some examples so that it'll become really clear. Integration. What's integration? Well, we know that, yes, we know that every system has to get new energy from the environment. When a system's integrated with its environment, that's how it gets new energy. How it gets integrated is by aligning its capabilities with opportunities. Let's take a closer look at that. Not all opportunities and capabilities are created equal. We can break them out into some two distinct categories. So there's growing opportunities and shrinking opportunities. And there's unique capabilities and generic capabilities. If you want to be successful in your career, if you want to make a lot of money or have lots of options in your career, then where you want to be in your integration is right up there in the upper right. Okay, if you're up there, you're happy. Life is good. Why is life good? Well, there's a growing opportunity, which means there's lots of resources. There's lots of energy available. Okay, and at the same time, you have unique capabilities. So if we were to look at a business right now, we could put Apple up in that quadrant. Think about it. It's a growing opportunity. There's lots of available energy. There's a growing demand for mobile computing, phones, access to information entertainment right at your fingertips. Apple has very unique capabilities, don't they? Think about it. Branding, global supply chain management, iTunes, App Store, right? They have this unique set of capabilities. They're serving a growing market opportunity, really, really good integration, really, really great potential for success. Think about this a little further. Any company that's up in that right quadrant has successfully built an ecosystem around itself. If you look at the top 10 companies in America by stock market value, so like the top three right now, I think, are Exxon, Apple, and Microsoft. All three of those have created an ecosystem that they control. What that means is it's very efficient for them to extract new energy from it to themselves. Apple, for example, if you buy an iPhone, you get your apps from the App Store. It's very seamless. It's very easy to engage and get new money, get new energy from you into the company. Exxon owns the entire petroleum vertical, from exploration to extraction to the gasoline station, right? They're extracting new available energy. They have a unique set of capabilities. That's how you get to be successful. Less good is, let's start here. If you're in a shrinking opportunity, right? If the available energy is going down, if the market needs are changing, if there's not that much available opportunity, but you still have unique capabilities, you can kind of make it there. Let's see, a company like this might be Microsoft. Okay, still have a set of unique capabilities, but notice how they no longer really apply to today's environment. Applied to the environment in the 1980s really well, pretty well in the 1990s. They used to kick Apple's ass, right? Apple's better integrated with today's environment. So you can still make it there. It's just not nearly as much fun. The other one is if you're in a market which is really growing, but you have generic capabilities, you can make it there too. It's just not as good. So let's say healthcare, right? Healthcare, growing opportunity, big need, growing market, lots of available energy. But why do most family practitioners suffer? Right? Generic family doctor, they make enough to pay their bills, to pay the rent, to pay the overhead. Most of them are really stressed. They want more money. They want more ease in their job. They're thinking about leaving their profession. It's because it's a set of generic capabilities. From the market's perspective, there's lots of practical alternatives to a family practitioner. It's hard to set them apart. Who has the most success as a medical practitioner? If that's how you define success, would be those who have unique capabilities, right? You go to the best brain surgeon for your particular condition, or the best allergy specialist. If you're of course, this should be obvious, where you don't want to be in life for your career is with generic capabilities in a shrinking opportunity, right? That's just a recipe for suffering. So this would be like a real estate agent for the past 4 years, right? Market's tanking, not a lot of available energy, lots of real estate agents to choose from. That sucks. What do the good real estate agents do? Well, the ones who've made it have tried to position themselves with some perceived uniqueness. Right? I'm the best agent in high-end Montecito homes. Or I'm the best agent for foreclosed properties in a short sale. You notice how they try to do that. It's true for every industry. In fact, all of advertising and marketing is basically just trying to position in the environment's eyes and the market's eyes about why you're unique, why you're different. Okay. So let's go back to your career. You want to find, you're here at college, by the way, whether you know it or not. Right. you're trying to develop your capabilities. You're trying to develop capabilities and find where to apply them in the world. And you have a choice. You can apply them in shrinking opportunities or growing opportunities. It's a really interesting question, though, how to predict what's going to be a growing opportunity 5 years from now or 10 years from now. Maybe we can talk about that a little later. Okay, so that's integration. You want to get integrated with the environment because that's where the energy is. If you're not integrated, you're going to perish. The most interesting part of this formula is below the line, and it's entropy. And I'm using it as a measure of all the energy and effort that has to take place within the system in order to maintain itself. Make decisions and get the work done. Here's why this is really important, is that available energy first flows below the line to manage the system, to maintain the system, to keep entropy in check. Only after those internal needs are met do you have energy left over to do integration with the environment, integration with the outside world. So here's a person in a hospital. This is a physics problem. Okay, here's a patient. He has a finite amount of energy. All of that energy, available energy, first has to go to heal himself, right? Has to keep the entropy in check, or he'll fall apart. He'll die. He has very little energy left over to be in integration with you if you went to visit this person. That's why if you go to visit a relative in the hospital, visiting hours are kept short. Okay, that the patient doesn't have a lot of extra energy available to be in integration with you. That's why a good doctor won't let their patient be pestered with tests day and night, right? They'll let them time to rest and recuperate. This is just physics. Here's another example. So I saw that Lindsay Lohan was in the news again. And this is just a physics problem, too. So it depends how you want to look at this. Imagine if you were a movie producer, right? And success for you is selling a lot of tickets. You need to find actresses, actors to fill your parts. The decision-making process you'd go through to choose would you hire Lindsay or not, you'd weigh this. Intuitive, you, even if you don't consciously aware of it, you say, okay, here's an actor that might get a lot of attention, give me good integration, but the entropy on the set is going to be really, really high. Right? Do I make that trade-off? Okay, just recognize, though, that the available energy for the film has to go through the entropy before it can be successful above the line. That's why the insurance on this film, if you were to hire Ms. Lohan, would be about $1 billion, because the odds are against you. You could also look at it from her perspective, right? What would be integration for her? I don't know, but let's say it's to be a successful actress, to have great fulfilling parts. Well, the entropy in her mental emotional systems is high, right? So she has less energy available to be in integration as an actress. The same thing's true for you, by the way, as a student. Okay, you have a finite amount of energy. Let's say you just had a fight with your boyfriend or girlfriend. Okay, that's a mental emotional system has a finite amount of energy, so you have less energy available to do your homework, to be present in class. Okay, you got to somehow make peace with that, or fix it, or heal it in order to free up the energy to be more present. Same thing if you're working two jobs and carrying a full course load and up really late, you're just tired. So you come to class, you're just not that engaged with the work. It's physics. You got to somehow lower the entropy needs in the system, in your system, get more rest, okay, pop a stimulant, right? Take some coffee. That's what we do. The only issue with stimulants and coffee is that just masks the symptom. It kind of gives you a temporary boost, but your internal system's still needing that energy, right? So it's a long-term cost. So we balance that as well. Imagine you're with a startup. Okay, what's a startup trying to do? A startup is trying to create a unique set of capabilities into a growing opportunity. That's it. That's why a VC, if you come with their plan, they'll ask you this question ultimately. Okay, what's the defensibility here? They're basically saying, What's unique about this that isn't perceived as a practical alternative? Okay. And what's the opportunity? But imagine you're in this startup. You've got a great opportunity. You've got a rock star software team. You're excited. But inside the company, the founders are at each other's throats, right? They want fundamentally different things. So the infighting in the company goes up really high. That's a physics problem. The company has a finite amount of energy. That available energy has to go to try to maintain the system, right? To navigate through this quagmire of destructive conflict. There's less energy available to find the opportunity to execute. So they'll miss their window. Okay? By the way, if you had an unlimited energy supply, you could take a long time to go and find and be in integration, right? The pressure here is with the startup is it doesn't have an external funding source. If it gets an external funding source like venture capital or a parent company to fund it, you know, that gives it that energy it needs from the external environment to try to continue to find integration. Same thing's true with Facebook, right? Do you guys all see The Social Network? Everybody see The Social Network? It's a good film. So that's really a story about this battle between integration and entropy. Okay, Facebook did some things really right in the early stages. They had high integration. Okay, lots of energy and market clout in the form of market clout coming to them. They had really, really high entropy, didn't they? Founder battles, investor wars, intrigue, backstabbing, lawsuits, high entropy. You can have high entropy and still be successful as long as integration is higher. That's why if you ask CEO said, you know, there's an adage in business, I've never seen a problem that another sale can't solve. Okay? It's true. It's true as long as integration is greater than entropy. Because if entropy gets greater than integration, you're energy bankrupt and you die. You're done. If I was starting out my business career again, our society, by the way, focuses all on integration, mostly issues, right? Strategy, fundraising, the exit. Okay, but the secret sauce is in the company. It's making good decisions and executing them quickly while keeping the entropy low, right? Not letting that get out of balance. Here's another system, the federal government. What a system, right? But think about it. They have lots of opportunity for the federal government, right? Jobs programs, educational programs, defense programs, whatever they are. They have lots of capabilities. They have capabilities we've granted them to tax, to legislate, to defend, yeah? Notice how high the entropy is in the system. Nothing's going to get done. If you're relying on the government to change or fix things, you keep waiting. You keep waiting until the entropy drops. And then the system will move really quick. For example, one thing that can get a system to lower its internal entropy and take action, integration really quickly, is when the system's under threat. So if you think back to 9/11, our system was under threat. All the politicking dropped down instantly. They passed legislation called the Patriot Act in about 72 hours. And that legislation took away things of civil liberties that would have been unthinkable just a day before, you know, 2 days before, right? Constitutional liberties, like things that our country was built upon, just went poof because the system's under threat. That's why there's a saying in politics, never lose the opportunity of a good crisis. Because they know that you can act on that fear and quickly ram stuff through. If you notice the conflict between the Democrats and the Republicans, okay, from an outside observer, Obama seems to have been trying to negotiate with the Republican Party, right? Trying to keep the entropy low. Hey, let's find middle ground. Let's work out a compromise. If you have two parties with a fundamental conflict of vision and values, I don't know if there is, but if it's perceived that there's a fundamental conflict of vision and values, the entropy in trying to join those together is always going to be really high. Okay, the only way you can bring them back together is to find common vision and values or split the organization. Like if you're in marriage counseling, by the way, if you and your partner can work things out, right? Marriage counseling is saying, the couple saying, our entropy is too high. There's too much conflict. There's too much disintegration in our marriage. We're not in integration. The marriage counselor will take you through a process and try to lower the entropy so you can have more love, more flow, more integration. But if you and your spouse just have a fundamentally different vision of the world and values, there's not an amount of counseling that's going to fix that. So there's certain times to recognize when you need to fight and when you need to compromise in order to move a system forward. Okay, this is a picture of Occupy Wall Street. You guys been following this? So let's look at the, what are they protesting, by the way? Well, if you watch some of the video clips, you'll hear two kind of levels of protest. One is, I haven't had work in 5 years. Okay, they're protesting at the level of integration. Saying, I don't have any other options, I can't find integration, I'm pissed, I'm going to protest. There's another, though, level of protest, which is down below the line in the area of entropy. And what they're saying is that this disparateness in wealth and the dominance of the financial institution on our country system is untenable. It creates really, really high entropy for everybody. And because we're not getting responsiveness from our government to break up those banks, to restore equal playing field, we need to protest. We need to protest to create a new system with lower entropy and higher integration for all. That makes some sense? There's another lens you could put on this, though, is will this protest be successful? And how you would do that, you say, okay, How well are they integrated, right? What are their capabilities? Capabilities in organizing, decision-making, putting forward an agenda, executing. Certainly there's lots of opportunity. Well, it's just a really interesting study because right now they're doing this participative communal protest movement. And all movements can kind of start like that, but at some point there will be some form of leadership that steps forward. It'll probably be elected. It'll be interesting to see if they develop their new set of capabilities to really drive forward some specific changes and be successful. If the movement breaks apart, right, that's entropy, things breaking apart. Oh, we're tired of this. Oh, we're not getting the change we want. It'll just break apart and that system will be done. Last example. By the way, you might be asking, what do all these examples have to do with your own personal success? They have everything to do with your personal success. Your personal success doesn't happen in isolation. It happens in integration with the environment. And what I want to communicate is that wherever you look, you can apply this formula and understand what really drives success. So let's look at our planet. And I want to talk about climate change. There's two camps of climate change you can see here. One is the climate skeptics or deniers who say nothing should be more important than economic integration, unfettered opportunity to go and exploit resources and make money and employ people. If you're on the side of, if you're really concerned about climate change, you recognize that this macro environment supports everything. And if the climate changes radically, the entropy in the system is going to get really, really, really high. And all of us are going to be in trouble. And so you have a passion to change. You have a passion to change the economic and socioeconomic system so that there's lower entropy, right? There's lower climate change. There's lower destruction in the environment so that we can all have integration. It's helpful to look at problems through a universal lens and get a sense of where people are really coming from. So let's go back to this. Where would goals fit in? Let me give you this. So imagine that you've got 100 arbitrary points of energy, 50 go below the line to maintain yourself, take care of yourself, to make decisions, at least 50 points to be in integration in your school, in your work, with your lover, with your job. If that was you, I'd give you a warning. Say, hey, heads up, it's not very efficient. If you were somehow able to drop that by half, you know, use less energy, know your purpose. Know your direction, know your career, know who you want in your life, who you don't want in your life. Right, if you're able to drop that internal energy use, that would free up 75 points above the line. That's a 300% improvement. It's really awesome. You really feel liberated. So goals, determination, security, hard work. Okay, setting a goal is about setting an intention of where to develop your capabilities or uncover an opportunity. Hard work, being persistent in developing your capabilities and your opportunities. Commitment, ethics, all these things you can place in this formula, but the driving formula, the driving determinant of if you're going to be successful or not is those two simple things, thermodynamics. Okay, so one way to apply this in your life right now is to do an energy scan, an entropy scan. So we know that energy flows from the inside out. Start with your physical health, okay? How's my physical health? Do you feel energy gains or energy drains there? And notice that, because that's why we say if you lose your health, you lose everything. Right? Because the energy flows inside out. So if you lost your health, you literally lost anything. Everything. You can't do anything else. Okay, then you go from your health to your primary love interests, your relationships, or with your family. And you look, are there energy drains there? And note them, because if there's a drain there, you can ignore it. That's an option. But if you ignore it, that energy cost is still lost, or it's still there. The energy loss is still there. Then you go to your work, your friends, your key clients, your key accounts, and you can just look and see what's adding to or what's subtracting from my energy, and recognize that you first got to eliminate the drains in order to get more energy gains and be successful. I'd like to stop there and have a dialogue. Does this raise any questions or observations for you? Yes.
Okay. Is it potential that that where your energy drains may come from, also there might be good energy coming from them as well at the same time?
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, so what do you do in that type of circumstance?
So there are several things that you can do, and I want to talk about them in the happiness section. It's a great question. I'll address them tonight. Does this make sense to you guys? Are you aware how you can apply it to any system in your life, or your school, or your work? Okay. Yes, question.
How do you go about quantifying things that might be sources of entropy or integration specifically?
Well, it's all relative to you, but one thing you can do is make like a little scale, 1 to 10. 10 would be, this is killing me. And 3 would be, yeah, it's tolerable. You know? And that would be one way. Any other questions about how to be successful? You want to keep entropy low, integration high, yes. In the white shirt with the stripes.
This is following up on those first two questions. I mean, I'd say in college we're at this point where we don't really know what gives us that best source of entropy.
Yeah.
Or the best source of enhancement.
Yeah.
And a lot of things are draining, but we don't really know where we'll get the most enhancement without the draining first. So like
yeah.
College and everyone's trying something new. How would you maximize or choose appropriately, you know? Like just clubs, like look, excursion clubs right there, there's thousands of them on campus. You know?
Awesome. I'm writing that down because I want to talk about it next. And I also want to talk about the gentleman's question there about how to eliminate drains, maximize gains. Any other questions you guys have right now? Yes.
What would you do if you have something that's causing you entropy right now, but you know it's good in the long
term? So, can you give a specific example? Like school, yeah? Yeah. So, school's such an awesome example. I didn't realize I was a good student until I was a sophomore in college. And up until that point, except for a very few number of courses, school cost me a lot of energy. Showing up cost me energy. Doing the work cost me energy. And like you, I did it because I had to. And I didn't have an option. The shift for me when I was a sophomore in college was a paper that I had written. It was for an English class, and it was about existentialism. But in the process of researching that paper, I got really passionate and interested about the subject. And I started to also have a sense of my own identity at that point in my life. And then school became really, really easy because I was able to see how it added to my energy. It added to my capabilities, and it supported me in what I really wanted to do. But until I was clear about what I really wanted to do, I just saw it all and experienced it all as a big energy drain. Now that should raise a question for everybody. You said, well, so what's the difference there? You notice the only difference is perception. And fundamentally, this all gets down to perception, as we'll talk about. But the question back to you is, what isn't perception? Right? It's all perception. Yes, question?
Do you think that all drains can be eliminated, or are there some that are just innate and fixed?
So the answer is that the lower your drains, the greater your gains, the more productivity and joy you're going to experience. Entropy is always eating away at the system, right? You're aging. It's dissolving over time. So ultimately, no, you can't escape it. The secret, though, is to try to keep it as, you know, keep it as low as you can, even reverse it temporarily for as long as you can. Yes, question. In the jacket. Yes. In the jacket and the turquoise shirt, yeah. Yeah.
You said that your energy drain went lower when you, your perception showed how, where you wanted to be.
Yeah.
How did you find out where you wanted to be? How did you change your perception?
It's a really wonderful question. I don't know any answer other than trying a lot of different things. And I'm going to give you some guideposts in this next section how to go about doing that. But it's trial and error, man. And it doesn't end. Okay? I for a while, I was really passionate about my career at Commission Junction. Okay? I got to a point where I absolutely couldn't stand affiliate marketing. Okay? I hate affiliate marketing. I want nothing to do with it. Just, there's no resonance for me. Okay? So I'm also the kind of person where for a long time I wanted to know. Like I wanted it all laid out nicely for me, right? What's my path and what are the steps and where does I wanted to know. It doesn't come like that. It comes through the messiness of life, right? Of trying and failing and succeeding, and you kind of get in this groove. And I'll give some pointers about how to navigate that more gracefully. My bigger point there is, you know, in the moment, I'll give you some signs. You do your best, and it keeps evolving as you keep evolving. Okay, let's go on to the next area. So we're talking about the physics of success. I want to talk now about the physics of happiness. Okay. And I want to focus this on relationships. So just like we did with success, give me a sense of what makes a happy relationship, a happy partnership.
Communication.
Good communication, yes. What else? Good sex, great.
Trust.
Good trust.
Win-win situations.
Win-win situations.
Mutual respect.
Mutual respect is beautiful.
Shared passion and values.
Yeah, shared passion, shared values.
Loyalty, a lot of work.
Loyalty, a lot of work. Okay? All these things are certainly contribute to happy relationships. By the way, I'm shifting happiness to relationships because just as everything's a system, everything's in relation to everything else. Okay, so you have a relationship with your job. You have a relationship with your computer. You have a relationship with your lover, with your parents, with your friends. Everything's in a relationship, okay? And happiness comes from good relationships. So just there's something more fundamental to happiness. And there's a really interesting study done of high achievers in all walks of life. Okay, arts, entertainment, science, business, whatever. High achievers. And what if you look at if you make a bell curve of any population, like 2-3% will usually be the best of the best. So take 100 engineering students, 2-3% are going to be really, 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 really good. Okay, and they'll break out and the rest will break out in a distribution curve. This is where it gets really interesting. Okay, in the same study, they asked people to self-rate their happiness. Okay, only 10% of the 2-3% actually rated themselves as authentically happy. Now that was shocking to me when I first heard it because, and then it made sense as I thought about it. Like for myself, the higher I went in my perceived success, the less happier I was. Okay. So the more my, let's say it was business success, or income. So the more my business success or income grew, the less genuinely happy I felt. Right? I was having to manage all these things I wasn't that good at or didn't really add to my energy. My relationship with my wife at the time was really frayed. I was not that present with my kids. I was getting fat. You know, so it's just, you know, just not that authentically happy. But think about this. You could take 1,000 of the most famous people in the world, any sector. Athletes, artists, scientists, business people, okay? Just a handful are going to be happy, authentically happy, according to them. Isn't that interesting? I thought it was interesting. So what's the secret, okay? Here's the secret. Happy high achievers get more energy than they give in all their key relationships. When I first heard that, I almost ran from the room because it really struck a chord in me. I was really against it. I said, wait a minute. Isn't happiness about giving? giving instead of receiving? Isn't it about genuine contribution? Okay, what is this about getting more than they're giving? Well, it ties back to the formula we were just going over, integration over entropy. And what it means, it's actually really intuitive once you think about it in this way. Imagine a person in their job who's so aligned with their job and their career, they're just like, I can't even believe they pay me for this. This work is awesome. I would do this for free. Okay? They're getting more energy than they're giving, right, in that relationship. Or imagine a marriage where it's a really, really good harmonious marriage. You'll notice that the couple are able to meet each other's needs in a way that doesn't cost them a lot of energy. You're just able to naturally meet your wife's needs, and she's happy and she's ecstatic, and you feel good, right? You're getting more from that relationship. Of course, this is a two-way street, right? If we're in relationship and I'm always taking more from you than you're getting back, well, that relationship's not going to last. So in a good, harmonious relationship, both parties are able to get more than they're giving. Okay. What happens if you're not getting more than you're giving in a relationship? What do you experience? Okay, you're experiencing resentment. But it's also you're experiencing a loss of energy, which is just physics. So if you're a do-gooder, right, if you're out there in the world trying to change the world, trying to fix the world, trying to make a positive difference, it can come from a place of resentment, or it can come from a place of joy and contribution. If it's coming from a place of things should be different, I need to fix it. By the way, I lived that way for a long time. It's just an energy cost. There's no happiness there. But if it's coming from a place of joy and contribution, and you're getting more from it than you're giving, then you're going to be very, very happy indeed. Okay, so why is this? Now I want to go down and explain the physics and talk about specifically relationships and give you some guideposts to choose appropriately in your career and how to max and minimize energy gains and drains. So think of any system, remember, anything's a system, whatever you want to measure, it's got to get new energy from the environment in order to survive and flourish. That means that it has to shape the environment and respond to change in the environment, and it's got to focus on its whole system, and including its parts and its subparts. So you came from another class over here, your system, it does you no good to walk over and not bring your right arm, right? That's a part and a subpart of your whole system. So that's just the basics of behavior. By behavior, I don't mean why some, you know, what's motivating something, only that it is doing this. It's showing some action, some mannerisms. Each of us has to do this all the time. Our families have to do this. Our company has to do this. UCSB has to do this. It's got to shape and respond, focus on the whole thing, focus on the parts. You got to build your house, okay? You got to pay your mortgage. You got to focus on your family. You got to pay the bills, right? There's this dance always happening. Well, this behavior shows up as forces, okay? And there's four forces. When there's a high drive to shape the environment, to make things happen in the environment, and you're focused on what's right in front of you, you're focused on the parts, it's called the producing force. If there's a need to to respond to change, right? There's a lot of change coming at you. You got to bring it all together, and you're focused on the parts. It's called the stabilizing force. By the way, synonyms for producing force would be to like make, generate, produce, transform, okay? Like in a company, you'd see this in somebody coding software. In a marathon runner, you see them actually running, okay? Like it's producing, it's doing the work, it's producing the results. Stabilizing force, synonyms would be to systematize, stabilize, standardize, make a process, okay? Make it efficient. High drive to shape the environment, and you're focused on the big picture, innovating force, okay? Synonyms, create, entrepreneur, right? New things. And the fourth force is you're responding to change, you're focused on the whole organism, you gotta unify or harmonize or coalesce all these forces. Now, because this is physics and every system has these basic characteristics, you can look anywhere in a system, from a company to a person to a family to even the work being done, and see these four forces in action. You can remember them by just remembering these beautiful little words, P.S. I love you. Okay, producing, stabilizing, innovating, unifying. Now let's just look at some systems. Here's a company. The producing force, sales, okay, engineering, production. Stabilizing force, make things efficient, systematized, accounting, quality assurance. The innovating force shows up in strategy, research and development, the vision of the founder. The unifying force are things that relate to bringing the whole company together, right? Human resource development, account management, right? Communing with the customer. That's a system. Here's a family. Here's my family out vacationing this summer. Producing force in a family traditionally is like producing kids, but it's also just the act of getting money, right? Supporting the family. The stabilizing force are the rules, the norms, the expectations in that family. The innovating force is that family's ability to adapt to changes in society. And the unifying force is the love and the unity that the family feels. Now, notice that all four of these forces have to be present. Okay, if one of them's absent, the system's going to collapse. But notice, remember too, that there's a finite amount of energy. So these forces are competing for available energy. They're competing for available energy within me, my family, my company. They're competing for available energy within you right now. What if this family loses their producing force? The dad loses their job. What happens? System's in trouble, right? Or imagine being part of a family where there's no stabilizing force. There's just chaos. There's no norms. There's no rules. There's no cleanliness. There's no order. It's just chaos and unruliness, right? It's not a family you'd want to be a part of. Or imagine a family that can't adapt to change in its environment. A family's quickly going to go out of existence. Or imagine a family with no love, no loyalty. Okay? Not a family you'd want to be a part of. So these four forces have to be there. They're there within you right now, as I'm going to show you. They're competing. So I want to look at how they show up and how you manage your life. Or how you manage a company. By management, I mean literally that, how you manage everything. Not necessarily a person or a company, but how you manage it all. Again, P.S. I love you. So here we go. Imagine you have a rowboat, and you take a person with a big producing force in them. Okay? High drive to shape the environment and focus on what to do, what's right in front of them. You put them in the boat and you say row, this person's just going to start to row. Okay? They're not going to ask how long, where am I going, why am I doing it. They just start to row. So if you're managing a company and you're managing a big producer, you might see them in sales, for example. You just got to tell them where to go or point them in the right direction, like who to sell to, and they'll just start selling. Okay, and they won't stop until you go tell them to do something different. But now imagine you take a big stabilizer, you put them in this rowboat, and you say, row. They're not going to row right away. They're going to say, wait a minute, you know, what's the most efficient rowing stroke I should use here? Okay, how long will we be gone for? Where are we going? Right? What's the plan? What's the itinerary? Where will the stops be? How much water do we have? Do we have enough provisions? Right? They're going to want all the details of how to do that. Now imagine you take a big innovator and you put him in the boat and you say, row. They're going to say, all right, why don't we put a sail on this baby? You know, or put an engine back here. Put a glass bottom in that. That'll be pretty cool. You know, why not that? Why not this? Put a big unifier in the boat. They're going to say, in row, they're going to go, well, where are all my buddies? Where's my friends? You can't expect me to do this by myself, can you? Okay, so these four forces show up in our personalities, how we manage the world around us. I'm shifting now from the producing force to the producer. That's a style. Okay, the producer is focused on what? The stabilizer is focused on how. The innovator is focused on why not. And the unifier is focused on who. I can compare lots of different things by just recognizing this simple pattern. So the producer, for example, moves at a really fast pace. They're focused on what to do right in front of them. They're very much results-oriented. They want to win. Very structured approach. If you're working with a producer, you have one in your work group. Okay, what they enjoy is completing the tasks, getting it done. Their office or environment, their dorm rooms tend to be cluttered and kind of busy. They like to get fast, to the point. They're energetic. They like to get the primary workforce producing output. The typical complaint in your work group, nobody else is putting in the amount of work that I'm putting in. Right? People aren't working hard enough like me. They make decisions kind of like this, like fire, aim, ready. Okay, very quick. They, if you've got a problem or a crisis and you have tend to be a big producer, what do? You bear down, you work harder. Okay, even if what you're doing is exacerbating the problem. you like to be praised for working hard, being productive. You really excel at taking action, and you're most satisfied when you score a victory. Okay, I'm going to share a video now of a big P. This is like a person with a really, really magnified producing force. And this is Alec Baldwin in a movie called Glengarry Glen Ross. And it's a famous scene of a big, big producer. Okay, this is a person with just a really magnified producing force. Whoops. Do you know how to play, John? Oh, bummer. It usually has a play thing right down here. Try it. Let's try what's next. Okay, it's not going to work. We'll keep going. Oh, well. Rent the movie. It's good. It'll teach you all about the big producer. Stabilizer, okay, very much focused on how things should be done. They move at a slower pace, very structured, very process-oriented. They take a local view of things. So what they really enjoy is analyzing problems and tasks. Really, really good at that. Their personal workspace, instead of being cluttered, will be kind of practical and organized. They're going to be factual, deliberate, a little bit slower in their speaking style. They're going to have a focus on planning, organizing. The complaint? You guys aren't following the process. Or, hey, we need a process here. How they make decisions is very, very methodical. And they address problems by implementing new systems or revising policies and procedures. They'd like to be praised for finding efficiencies, having high quality, creating order. They excel at analysis, and they're most satisfied when achieving high quality. So what if you were managing, imagine that you're a business owner. Somebody comes into your office and they're big stabilizers. That means they're going to be moving a little bit more slowly. You're wanting to drive forward change. Do you have a sense of how they might react to that desire to have change? Their first response is going to be no. Okay? They're saying no because they don't understand. They see all the details. And they're trying to understand how your desire to change things impacts the details. So when they're saying no, they're really saying, just tell me more. Okay, I need more information. Slow down. I need more details. You got to give them time to analyze. This is a movie called The Caine Mutiny. If you ever get a chance to watch this, it's a famous movie. Big stabilizer. He's in the middle of a war zone. It's Humphrey Bogart. And he's focused on finding the people who sold some strawberries, okay? And the crew mutinies on him. The point is that stabilizer focuses on making things efficient, even if it doesn't make any sense, a big stabilizer. Big innovator, they results-oriented, really quick, totally fluid, totally unstructured, and you'll see traits like this. They really enjoy spotting new opportunities. Their personal workspace will be very unique, creative, like pictures or awards usually. Normal communication style is charismatic and expressive. The workforce focus is on finding the next opportunity, like moving that thing forward. Typical complaint of a big innovator, nobody's getting it. You know, nobody's supporting this idea. The thing about the innovators, they're changing their ideas every day, right? Three times a day. And so people hear the first idea, it sounds pretty good. They hear a third idea in 3 days, they're like, wait a minute, you know, slow down. Very bold in their decision making. They kind of sense an opportunity and act on it. They get bored easily. They're under pain or stress. They tend to try to find something different or new to focus their energy on. They want to be praised for finding creative solutions that work and getting others excited. And they excel at conceptualizing. They're most satisfied when they're thinking outside of the box. So you guys know this. Classic example of a big innovator, right? He actually says in this movie, one of my inventions finally worked. That's like it for the innovator. And the last, this unifier, very unstructured like the innovator, but they're more process-oriented, and they're really focused on who's involved. They move at a slower pace. If you went into a unifier's office, big unifier's office, they'd have all the time in the world to hear you. I want to know how you're doing, how your life is, how you're really feeling. They want to bond with you. If you went into a big producer's office and tried to have bonding time, they'd kick you in the pants right out the door, okay? Really enjoy listening. They're warm, welcoming, very, very appropriate in their speech, very connecting, very affirming. The work focus is always on consensus and team building and unity. The complaint is that people aren't being team players. How they make decisions is they are very astute judges of what people are really feeling. So if you asked a unifier in an environment, team environment, well, what do you think? They wouldn't tell you unless they really understood how everybody else is really thinking and feeling. And then they'd go where the political winds are moving. They address problems by looking to bring people together. They like to be praised for empathy, emotional intelligence. They excel at empathizing and unifying a group. And they're most satisfied when they're developing strong relationships. So if you've ever seen this movie, it's Legally Blonde. And the lawyers are fighting in the office. And she brings out the snap cup and says, you know, we're all get along in the snap cup. So it's about, you know, trying to create unity, harmony, even if there's not any real need for one. Okay, now let's get back to you. You have a mix of these four forces. If you're pretty mature, you'll have two dominant. Okay, if you're really evolved, you might have three, but you'll always be weakest in one. So I've had the privilege of knowing John, for example, for a long time. And John, as you know, great house. He's been successful in his career. Right? He started out as an entrepreneur. High drive to produce. And a high drive to innovate. And he was always really good at connecting with customers and clients. So he basically saved, Citrix, by really getting out there and listening to customers and connecting with them. Those traits are, you know, so if we were to code John, we code him like this. Okay? He had a high producer force then, pretty high innovating force, high unifying force, right? You still kind of work this way, but my sense with John is that he's more and more backing off the producing force as he gets older. And this is coming on even stronger. Okay. What this also is just looking at John, like notice his introduction of the speakers. Right? He like puts a lot of energy and effort into that. He's always very appropriate and affirming. You notice that? That's a unifier trait. Okay. If you're sitting in your seat right now going, Jesus Christ, when is this guy going to finish? You know, you're just a big producer. I don't take it personally. Okay? If you're a big stabilizer, okay, if you're sitting there going, I need more detail. I don't really buy it. Okay? It's just a big stabilizing force coming forward. And if you're sitting there going, oh, I see how it applies to this, or what about this, or what about that? It's just a big innovating force coming up strong. Well, because you have a finite amount of energy, you're trying to, you have some natural traits here that add to your energy. So, for example, if John spends more time unifying, it tends to add to his energy. Get that? If you put John in a room alone at this point in his career and said, figure out these spreadsheets and do an analysis, of course you could do it, right? But what would happen to your energy? It go down. Okay? So each of these forces are in us. You want to know what your traits are right now, and that will help you figure out where you want to spend in your career. So if you're a producer, the lens you use is on what to do. Your drains are not having enough time. My God, there's never enough time. Look at all I have to do. The gains are winning, getting momentum, getting results. Your foes are people who don't work hard enough, and your friends are people who work just as hard as you. Okay? If you're a stabilizer, your lens is how. Drains, costly drains, too much change, not enough control. Gains are having control, order, accuracy. The foes are people who don't do it right the first time, every time. And the friends, those who add your energy, they follow the process. The innovator lens, hey, why not this? Look at all this opportunity. What about that? The drain here is interesting. It's actually too many ideas. What happens in an innovator is they're spinning up so many ideas that they can't grok onto like one and move it forward. And so it starts to get tiresome. Like they can't see their way out of a paper bag for a person who can usually see so far. They get confused by their own overabundance of ideas. The gains are people get excited, they buy in. If it's an entrepreneur, fans for their business, people giving them money, people coming to work for them, it gets them really excited. The foes are those who don't get it. Oh, they didn't get it. Right? And then the unifier, the drains, way too much conflict, the gains, a lot of team harmony. The foes, hey, you don't get along as a team. And the friends are those who add to the group. So you can look at these four styles and get a sense, perhaps, of where you stand. And this will help us answer how you go about choosing appropriately and how to min and max energy drains and gains. Okay. So here you are in college. Here's how you are. Here's how you want to be. And here's how others want you to be. You like the chat style writing? Okay. If you want to be happy, or if you want to be productive, or both, it's really helpful to recognize how you show up in your school and in your work and in your life. Are you showing up? It's some combination of this, okay? It's how you're using your available energy. You're using your available energy to produce results, to stabilize, to innovate, to unify, or some combination. If you're showing up in one style, but you want to be a different style, like you want to be, let's say you're doing accounting, but you really want to express your creativeness. You know, you really feel like you're an innovator, but you're stuck in a stabilizing career. You can see that conflict. You can maybe see the conflict, like if your parents want you to be a lawyer. Now, there's many different kinds of lawyers. But let's say a tax lawyer would be a stabilizer innovator, right? Find a creative application, make sure that it's all done correctly. Your parents want you to be a lawyer, but you really want to be a sailor, you know, whatever, right? Let's just, okay? What we're all trying to do is make peace with this, okay? But if there's a big gap here, that's an energy drain. That's a loss of happiness. That's a loss of productivity. It's like asking John to go do accounting for a week. Okay, it's an energy drain. How you want to be happy and productive is to have all three of these as close as possible. Okay, this is like a vector of happiness and productivity right here. But what this should show you then is success is like building things up, right? It's building up your capabilities. It's building up your achievements. But happiness is letting go. Okay? It's letting go of others' expectations. It's letting go of things you might have wanted but aren't really committed to. It's letting go of stories you tell about yourself. So if success is building up, happiness is letting go. And finding this groove here. So let's go back to the question of how do you choose your career appropriately? Well, get a sense of what adds to your energy. Is it producing? Is it, you know, results? Is it making things efficient? Is it being creative? Is it bringing the team together? You'll notice that any career has, or a certain career or a certain position in a company has elements of that. And then find something that you're passionate and interested in and build your capabilities in that area. Be a specialist in that area. Being a specialist means you have a set of unique capabilities. Okay? So if you were thinking about being an accountant because your dad was an accountant, you'd want to gut check that and say, you know, what is the actual time energy allocation of being an accountant? How do you spend most of your time? Let's say it's stabilizing. Okay, well, does being in that mode add your energy? If so, that's a good career choice. If not, it's just you're not going to be that happy, and ultimately you're not going to be that productive. It goes back to entrepreneurship. If you're trying to do a business to make money, it's misaligned. It's misaligned because the environment's always changing. We don't know what's going to happen in the future. But if you're doing something that's interesting to you, it's curious about, it seems to solve a real problem in the world, and it allows you to express these elements of the right mix of forces for you personally, then that's a great career move for you. What makes a happy marriage? Like, imagine you had a marriage that looked like this. Imagine these are two people and it looks like this, where both of them are big producers. What would that marriage be like? Pardon me? Yeah, a lot of competition, working really, really hard, not a lot of time for each other. Okay. Okay, let's talk about Apple with Steve Jobs passing. Let's do Steve and Tim. Any entrepreneur is a big producer innovator. They see a vision, they take action on it. It takes a lot of energy, by the way, to hold a vision. So if your boss is a big innovator, don't mess with their vision. You'll be your boss's friend if you can help them execute on their vision. If you want them to change their vision, if the vision's misaligned with the environment, you can ask questions. Tell me how this works, or have you seen this latest thing lately? You need to allow them to buy into the vision. That's why Steve was so, you know, cutthroat, right? Holding this vision, all of his energy focused on that. If you either got it or you didn't. If you didn't, you were out. If you didn't do it the Apple way, no time for you, right? Just out. It didn't cost him any energy, right? You're not important to me. You're not adding him energy. You're out, okay? High drive to win. High drive to produce results. So this is Tim Cook, who's now Apple CEO. Tim really was critical in transforming Apple, you know, 15 years ago, I think. And what he did was he went into the Apple supply chain and made it very, very efficient. He made it very, very stable, so Apple started to get these capabilities to do cool products and get high margins in them. But he's also known as a guy who will put back together Steve's mess, right? If Steve cuts your balls off, he'll put them back on, right? Like, he'll have an ear for you, right? He'll make you feel okay about it. He'll coalesce it back together. But they both had high drive, like insane work ethic, insane wind. Mode to win. Good partnership. Okay? Because they can move at the same pace. One partner can hold the vision. The other can make it efficient and stable and keep the team together. Great partnership. Now what's happened in Apple is that. Okay? So there's questions, you know, the question was going on, what will happen to Apple now that Steve has passed? Well, it seems like, so the answer is they'll do just fine as long as the environment's still the same. Okay, as long as tablets and mobile phones and other things are happening, but unless the innovating force is somehow indoctrinated into Apple that I'm not seeing, when there's a big market shift, just like every other large company, they'll miss it because that entrepreneurial innovator force is lost. When my, okay, classically, this was masculine. And this was feminine. If you look through history, and even in most, you know, non- or industrializing nations, you had the man who did the hunting and the gathering, and the woman who kept the home in order and raised the kids. When my mom went to work in the 1980s, my parents had a really rocky time of it over time, and what we got was a maid and a marriage counselor. Okay? So I'm not saying that this should be the feminine role or that this should be the masculine role. I'm just pointing out that in any system, all four forces have to be played. And if not, the system's going to show some predictable signs. It's going to be out of balance. It's going to be unhealthy. Nobody involved is going to be getting more energy from it than it's costing them to put into it. So that's how you eliminate. So the question was asked, what if I'm getting from a relationship some integration and some entropy? That's true for all relationships, right? The things you can do are nothing. You can cut the relationship, right? So it's no longer in your life. Or you can learn to appreciate it and change your perspective on it. If you can appreciate it and change your perspective on it, you'll suddenly get more energy from it. But what you can't do is change the other person. You can't ask somebody who's this to be this. They've got to want to do that, and it takes a lot of time and energy and investment on their part to be able to do that. So those are the three things that you can do. So that's the other key message, is if you want success and happiness, you want to be mindful of where the energy drains are, and then you want to know the forces that are at play. So I'd like you to think of one system right now, maybe a family or a relationship, and do a check with me. You know, is it adding to my energy or is it costing me energy? Everybody can do that? And then recognizing that if it's adding to your energy, don't do anything. It's great. If it's costing you energy, start to look at what are the forces at play there and what does the system need? Okay? If you're having an energy drain with your lover, what's the missing force there? Okay? Why is the energy drain occurring? Is it a lack of stabilizing force, right? Does she need, he need more details? Does she need more time? Or just need to love him up? Okay, all these things can break down to the application of these four forces. Last little bit of advice is learn to judge the force and not the person. Okay, because if you're judging the person, the energy flow gets shut down, and they're going to react to you the same way. But if you look at somebody, just, oh, there's just a person with a high producing force happening, you know, judge that and give them what they need. So high producing force needs you to help them remove obstacles. High stabilizing force, oh, they're pushing back. They just need some details. Give them more details. High unifying force, they want some time, right? They need some connection. High innovating force needs you to get excited for them. So you learn to judge the forces, not the person, and you give the force what it needs, and you'll be very successful and happy in your career and in your relationships, assuming that you're staying in your own genius zone, which is here. Okay. If you want to learn more, I have a whole model of this for running your business. So go to organizational physics, and there's topics on business strategy, execution, managing others, success and happiness, restructuring your organization, all kinds of cool stuff. And you can follow me on Twitter at Lex Cisney. Yes, if they have questions, sure.
Well, hey guys, we have time for some questions. Let's take advantage of having Lex here with us and fire off a few more questions for him.
Yes.
What if it's a negative habit that is so your energy drain and it's hard to get rid of that habit?
Okay.
Like cigarettes or anything.
Yeah. So what happens with those negative habits, let's say, let's use cigarette smoking, right? I take a hit of the cigarette. It gives my body and my emotions that hit that it needs to feel satiated, to feel balanced. Okay? Only cost of that is it eats away at the inside of the system, and it got to keep going back, going back, going back to get that hit, and it raises the entropy over time, right? That's an addiction. Okay, so I'm no expert in how you overcome that. How I've overcome different sets of addictions is I just outgrow them, right? I just am committed to something more than that, and I, like, you know, use discipline and hard work and a lot of self-forgiveness, by the way. Most of the addiction cycle that I found comes from when you're holding a lot of guilt or unworthiness or shame that you try to mask through a behavior. So it's like this. Oh, I shouldn't smoke. Fuck, I need to smoke. Fuck, I'm so angry I'm smoking. Okay? If you can break that last link in the chain, fuck, I'm so disappointed in myself for smoking, and get to a place of acceptance. Acceptance frees up energy, and that stops that negative cycle from happening. Great works on addiction. I found a gentleman named Gay Hendricks. He's really good. There's also a gentleman, I don't remember his name, but it's called Radical Forgiveness. And it's just really a model to look at any situation and learn to get to a place of acceptance with it, which ultimately frees up energy, which allows you to apply it in integration. Yes?
I feel like the component of time is kind of missing in this model, just because in the sense, in, that person just brought up the idea of the cigarette. So in that sense, like, cigarettes bring mostly positive energy, let's say. But in the long term, you know, you'll eventually maybe get sick or whatever. That'll be the source of a lot of negative energy. Where does time come in?
I wouldn't, from my perspective, I wouldn't say that time is missing from the model, but it's just an acknowledgement that it's running, and there will be activities that you do that give short-term energy boosts that have long-term ramifications. And the only way you judge those is to have enough awareness to ask up front, is this going to ultimately add to my energy or cost me energy, right? Should I drink and drive? You know, like, that there's that element of it, but... Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
By the way, like this notion of addiction and habits. Okay, I used to read the newspaper when there were newspapers. And what I noticed was I spent a lot of time reading the newspaper, but I'd feel depleted afterwards. And so I just made a decision, I'm not gonna do that anymore. I'm gonna do it less, and I'd do it less, and I'd have more energy, and you kinda like have to make those incremental gains. I found helpful. Yes?
When you were college or our age, what was your biggest energy drain, and how did you fix that?
So my biggest energy drains in college were feeling like I didn't fit in and looking for a way to fit in. And how I fixed that was time. I went to a lot of different colleges. Like I did I paid my way through college, and I did like three junior colleges 3 years in a row. And then I did 2 years at St. Thomas. And so just that feeling of feeling comfortable, you know, in an environment was a big drain for me. I fixed it by growing out of it, learning kind of where my place was, learning to be comfortable. Big drains were with my girlfriend at the time. It was one of those relationships of break up, get together, break up, get together, break up, get together. I fixed that one by ending it. Actually, no, she broke up with me in Hawaii after I came home from Singapore. First time I saw her in 6 months, and we broke up. It was a 7 week or 7 day vacation in Kauai. Day two, we broke up. So that was a fun vacation.
All right, we have time for a couple more.
Yes.
What are some ways to change the size of your letter using the PS I Love You model? Say Tim recognizes that he's big in those areas,
yeah,
low innovator, or I recognize that I'm a high producer, but I wouldn't mind having some more stability. Could you suggest some methods for both of those, I guess?
Yeah. So two things come up for me in answering that question is you'll only change when you're capable of changing. And you want to complement, you want people around you who complement where you're weak so you can focus on your strengths. The best thing I've found for cultivating more of a trait that you want to is, for me personally, would be just meditation. So I've been meditating for 15 years now, and what I notice is that my witnessing of the actions creates a gap. And so therefore then old habits or old ways of doing and thinking have a space to change. I found that really helpful personally. You'll just notice though that like people will evolve over time, right? You'll evolve through your own life experience. You kind of change and mellow. I don't think if you came out like this though, I don't think you'd ever be this. Like I think there's just one that's ultimately always kind of weaker in you. Right? If you didn't come out a high innovator, I haven't seen that you're going to be a dominant innovator later in your life. You can kind of work three in my experience, but not the weakest one. Just my observation, maybe more of a hunch. So guys, thank you so much. Just keep this in mind. Success and happiness, look to eliminate the drains and create gains.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.